Blog Talk Radio.
The motherfucking saga continues.
Yo, yo, what's up, world? It's Badass Thuggin' like I usually do. And you better turn it up, bust some speakers out, cause we off the motherfucking cuff. You dig how we do it? Dog Pound Gangsters 2000 and beyond.
What's up with it, John? Man, don't change that sound. This your player partner, the legendary Cocaine. And you tuned in live to Off the Cuff Radio. Better not touch that sound. Wiggling.
Yeah, this is Cassidy the Hustler. And right now, you listening to the Guillotine. Show them the respect they deserve, man. Off the Cut Radio, man. Y'all already know how they doing it, man. I need y'all to stay tuned. They've been doing it for years. So show them the respect they deserve. And you heard it out of bars, mom. Easy.
Keep it moving like this. Yo, this your boy Rampage. You're not rocking with the best. With Off the Cut Radio. Classic. History. Fix your face to all you haters. We off the cuff, baby.
What's up, everybody? This your girl, Bonnie Dollars, the queen of trap, representing Crenshaw, and you are now tuned in with Off the Cuff Radio. What's up?
What's up, y'all? This is Miss Irresistible, giving a shout-out to the live show on Friday nights, Off the Cuff Radio, and I'm live from the 704. Make sure y'all tune in for the blazing hot music.
What it ain't, what it do. Chilly Chill from that original Lynch Mob. Off the Cuff Radio, always where it's at on Friday night. West West, y'all.
Yeah. Live and direct. Off the Cuff Radio. Episode 553 underway. I'm your host, King Eric, the Media Assassin. This show is sponsored by Fleetwood and the Cop Pickers. Cocaine Buddy Boy Entertainment, Core Financial, Screwball Radio, Da Vinci Clothing. I got my host T-Max with the facts in the building. What's good, man?
Man, what's going on, brother, man? Look, it's another magnificent Monday to start off the week just right in terms of the work week. We are here, of course, on that OTC frequency. Shout out to our man, DJ Sincere Dirty Basement Radio as well, and our co-host in spirit, Alana Sandman, Lady Chinchilla, who are always with us. Tonight's show is a very special one. Our guest tonight has one of the dopest pages on IG in terms of all things hip-hop trivia and history. And it is a collective of not only him, but like-minded individuals who have a love, respect, and an astute and passionate sensibility for preservation of the culture. Words cannot express how much his page is a testament to the greatness of perseverance, of rigorous study, academia, and above all, sharing that talent with everybody in the cyber universe. We're so privileged to have him on. There's a whole collective. It took a time to get him on. But without further ado, because we're going to chop it up on some major history tonight, ladies and gentlemen, Hip Hop Museum. What's going on, man?
Yes, sir.
Y'all can hear me?
Yeah,
yes,
we can.
Y'all can hear me? Okay, yeah. What up? How y'all doing?
We good. What about you, man? How you doing?
We're cool. Can't complain. We're going to get on this flight to Atlanta.
Okay. So we got you a little bit before you get on and whatnot. Yeah, man. So, like I said, it took a little bit of time to get you, but we're definitely excited, you know, to have you on. I guess we're going to get right to it. Tell us a little bit about yourself and your page, you know, and how y'all, you know, got started in terms of being one of the dopest history pages on IG.
So I'm Millie. I grew up wanting to be a rapper, and well, at first when I was young, I wanted to be a wrestler, and then I wanted to be a rapper. I rapped for about 15, 20 years from the age of 12. Then I started managing artists. I eventually opened up an art gallery when I was in my mid-20s, and then from that, I opened a mini hip-hop museum inside of the same building.
When I got the idea, I was standing outside of a J. Cole concert,
and just trying to think of new ideas of, you know, what else I could put inside the art gallery. And that's the first thing I thought of. That was 2017 when I had the idea.
Man, that's dope, man. I mean, in terms of, you know, you rapping and whatnot, what did you learn in terms of what it was, you know, for the years that you did it, in terms of what it takes to get in the game and just, you know, just to, you know, just developing, honing your talent and all of that?
Yeah, so much. Like, early on, I eventually just found out that it cost a lot of money to get in, to get into the game. You feel me? Like, people think it's free. It costs money to make you happen. So I think when I really learned that was I had a meeting at Atlantic Records once upon a time when Sycamore was there. Sycamore managed Travis Scott now, but
DJ Sycamore, yeah, right?
Yeah. We had a meeting with him. This was probably 2007, 2008, I don't know. And you feel me? They was willing to do some marketing shit for us for like $2,000, yada yada. Which at that time in your early 20s, it sounded like a lot of money. But today, shit, $2,000 is rent. So, I learned a lot just in terms of, you know, you need money to make sure it happens. And when I stopped rapping and started managing, that's what I tell artists. Like, you got to have a budget. And it's not just about talent. So that's a missing part.
Now, definitely, for that first iteration of your career, in terms of what you found in terms of rapping and then moving, transitioning into the management aspect of it, what did you find from how it takes to, because we already talked about the monetary aspect of it, many, but also the fact about the attitude, the basically the artist in terms of their temperament, making sure that they are committed to what they're doing and being their best interest in terms of just making sure that they're doing the right thing.
All of that, because you need to learn the business. You need to learn some aspects of the business yourself. You need to have some kind of a business mindset. You know, you're going to be on time or early for stuff, all that kind of stuff. It's very important. It's not just about making the music. But that's a very small, I always say it's 90% business and 10% talent.
Yeah.
And on top of that, too, you have to, and on top of that, it's also basically representing the best deal for your client, because you're going in, you're talking on his behalf and making sure he don't get screwed at the end.
Yep. Exactly.
Yeah, and then, you know, as we do the show, you know, like King was saying, you know, making sure that they don't, get, you know, screwed or what have you. But also, too, man, it's also about the fact that I lost my train of thought for a second. But it's also, too, about what it takes, like you said, because it's expensive to get in the game. I talked to a friend of mine who has said that it takes almost $200,000 in terms of a total package to get really moving, like in terms of having your videos, you know, course, and we say it on the air because everybody knows this shit's happening. I mean, we're back in the day. It wasn't payola on the radio. But now these radio stations are owned by these corporations, so they all work together in terms of the artists that they want to push.
Yeah, and the same songs on the radio all the time. That's why it's the same amount of songs that get played over and over.
You know, but that's the thing. Well, you got to get your foot in the door, but once they think you are commercially viable, then that's where you're going to start seeing a situation where, you know, they're able to get in terms of all of that. When you look at how the game has changed in terms of the marketing aspects and when you were doing it, 20 years, when we look at it relatively, is not a long time in terms of where we've seen the transitioning of different genres, different artists come in. How the careers intersected. I mean, we were looking, you know, going back to years. I mean, this is going back in the same, I mean, within then, in 20 years, we've seen 50 Cent really get his rise up. We saw Jeezy coming to the game. We saw Gucci. You know, we saw Ludacris getting more and more into his acting career. We saw Soulja Boy, you know, and that whole Atlanta snap rap movement coming to play. We saw Dipset moving. I mean, it was a lot going on in that period. A
lot of big movement.
Yeah. When you look at it now, how did the game change from there to where we are at now?
The early 2000s, when there was big movements and clicks.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like the industry made sure they did away with that shit. There was too many. I mean, aside from the inside fighting, like all of the crews always seem to break up because of their own situations. But also, the industry wanted to make sure that it wasn't a lot of like that black. It was black powerful movement, like from Rockefeller to whoever the fuck else you can name. Like there's so many and shit. But it's like the bigger execs and shit in the business make sure to kind of, you know, start inner turmoil or whatever so that, you know, they could be directly tied to the overall major label corporations and shit. Like, there's no real crews today. None. Like, and that's crazy from the hip-hop standpoint.
Yeah, they really started a division with R&B because you notice you don't even have any R&B groups out here no more. Everybody's
no
solo.
Group. There's no group. Yeah, there's no group. It's like, shit, what? Is it Domingos? That's it.
And they
like,
broke up.
Then they broke up, you feel me? So it's yep. Barely even any duos, you know? You got City Girls.
Yeah.
That's it.
Yeah, and it's wild because even going back 20 years, well, over 20 years, you know, we go maybe a 20, 21, 23-year period, we're looking at all the, like you said, R&B singers, like King was saying. I mean, it's not, I mean, when you had Vivian Green, when you had Glenn Lewis, you know, that whole, like, neo-soul movement, you know, that was really beginning to come along in time. Even for all her nutty-ass shit, Jaguar Wright, you know, I mean, you know, they were pretty much coming into that wave of it. And then it just, over the years, began to change. You know, even, you know, R&B, you know, really ain't even the same no more. I mean, you got Chris Brown. I mean, you had Jacquees, who was running for a minute, you know, but it's like, it's not even the same anymore in terms
mm-hmm.
of just, yeah.
And we got we got the Such a Vibe Museum as well that focuses more on like R&B and all the other genres of music pretty much. Basically R&B, but we focus on all the genres of music outside of hip-hop. The Such a Vibe Museum.
Man, and definitely, that's the perfect segue. So we got to get into that too. Okay, so you said you were at the J. Cole concert, and that gave you the idea to go ahead and really go forward with this. J. Cole, obviously, one of the most influential voices of our generation, from King's hometown, North Carolina, really brings back that essence of the just the soulfulness and hip-hop and creativity. Why did he inspire you so much in terms of what you are doing now?
Well, it wasn't even that he inspired it. We were just standing outside. The arena doing promo
mm-hmm.
while the concert was going on, and we had an artist outside live painting, and we were just doing promo for the art gallery. And while standing out there, trying to think of new ideas to put inside the art gallery, so. The mini hip hop museum idea came to my mind, and then a few months later, I brought that to life. And then what's crazy is a year after we opened, we actually did a pop up for the mini hip hop museum at J. Cole's first festival. So it was
mm-hmm.
cool.
That's dope, man. What was it like in terms of really seeing it come to life like that?
I'm so, like, when I have an idea, I'm just so fucking used to making it happen. As soon as I have an idea, I'm quick to make the shit happen. So, I mean, it was surreal because as soon as I had to, there wasn't really a physical hip-hop museum that existed when I decided to do it. So we started looking for people to donate and all of that, and it was just, people were excited to contribute. We got so many tapes and CDs and vinyls and magazines that right away
That's dope. That's dope. I mean, I can speak for myself. When I first came across y'all page, you know, and I'm so glad that we all follow each other on here on IG. But, I mean, I was just blown away in terms of not only – because when people look at your page, for what you and your staff do, the love is there, the tenacity, the study, everything that's essential to making sure that the page maximizes its full possibility in terms of really giving people the understanding of the backstory. You know, it's one thing to know about artists, but to know the backstory behind certain things that happen is just important because it dictates how things move.
That's so, content.
Yeah, the content. Yeah, man. So you all are based out of Maryland, correct?
Yeah, I'm in Baltimore.
Okay, Baltimore stand up. To some of the stories that you all have managed to find, how did you manage to dig and, you know, really, really find, like, how the history behind some of this stuff here?
A lot of it I just stumbled upon or I heard about back in the day, like, before social media, so I'm like, I might remember it and look it up or listen to a certain song, look up some certain shit on Genius. But I don't, these days, for the past 2 years, I don't really listen to music. I just listen to podcasts. So I'm listening
right.
to, I'm listening to two, three, four hour podcasts, you feel me, like, daily, like, that's it. Like, I don't have time to listen to music because a lot of the podcasts are so long. So that's where I'm getting a lot of this information from, and I might have to pause the podcast and come back to it another day or in a few hours because I got to take time to pick it apart and, you know, research and make the posts and shit. So, like, I feel like we ain't even scratched the surface with all the fucking, there's so much content out there, like, and so much shit that we still need to share, but it's a lot. Like, but the podcast is mainly what I go to, and then, like, we got so many old magazines and tapes and CDs, so going through those, and, you know, everybody didn't read magazines, and you could just find something in and post it. It's just endless. The content is endless. Like, I could,
it is.
If it was humanly possible, I could have 100 posts of this, like, but,
try
to spread it out.
But when you did, because there was a couple of joints that we got to talk about, the two of the albums. And for those who want to get it on eBay, if you know where to go on eBay, they're not as expensive, but some of them you got to watch who you get it from because they will jack the price up. Currencies, Pilot Talk 1 and 2. Because I grabbed both of those when they first dropped back in 2010. They came out within 6 months of each other. And, you know, of course, I had to put my comment on it because a lot of people don't know that story about what happened with it with Dame Dash and Currency.
Yeah,
you know, disclaimer on Off the Cuff Radio, y'all, because we don't go around gossiping and being chatty patty. We only speak about history.
Yeah, stick with the facts. Was here.
Yeah,
people don't
even
know. Yeah, people don't know that Currency was with Dame after the Rockefeller shit.
Yeah, and
that first Pilot Talk was a classic.
Yeah, that was the 1170. Yeah, the 1172 DD label. That's what Dame had, and you know, of course, Currency sued Dame over the release of those albums because Currency was like, you know. And side note, y'all, it's always important as an artist to own your own shit because you want to be able to say when something is going to come out. And at that particular time, Currency did not want a release, and he sued Dane for $3 million. Now, they did settle that out of court for an undisclosed settlement, but those albums were eventually taken off the shelf. Like, you can't even buy them in stores anymore.
That's crazy. I'm going to make a more detailed post about that, too. Most people probably don't know. That happened.
Yeah. Yeah, but so on eBay, because I, you know, just looked around just for the academic stuff. Some of those albums at one point, the pile of talk. Now the vinyl, of course, is very expensive. I've seen that vinyl go on eBay going back a couple of years for like $200. And I've seen the CDs at. Oh yeah, they're gonna hype you. The vinyl is a lot more rare. CDs are a little more in circulation, but the CDs, I saw the CDs at one point. I sent King a snapshot a couple of years ago, and I think the CD was going for like $75 for the first pile of talk. But that's why I tell people, you know, just go online and shop, because the albums are worth the money. Both of them are good. But it's definitely like anything. Now, also, too, when we talk about the elements of the artifacts of it in terms of physical copies of albums, because you all obviously dig into a lot of it, what is your feeling on how a lot of these records and tapes now, CDs, that we just took for granted to be able to buy years ago, how a lot of them are very, very rare to find now?
And I mean, and most people just threw stuff away. And it's, I mean, I was one of them. I had, like, I was going to the flea market every week when I was younger, getting mixtapes. I had a shopping bag full of mixtapes, and I let somebody borrow them or gave them away, just thinking, you know, I'm on the internet now. I'm on these message boards. I don't need these CDs. So I gave so much shit away, like, at one point. And now when I started the museum, I'm like, damn. I wish I would have kept a lot of stuff. But, I mean, shit, a lot of people don't find a need for them, but some of us do, because some of the shit you can't get on streaming. Like, a lot of the, you know, copyright issues, like, for example, TVT Records Code Catalog isn't on streaming. So a lot of, like, Lil Jon shit and whoever released albums on TVT, you can't even listen to them on streaming right now. And just to go to Day Life Own shit, like, a lot of stuff that, you know, wasn't on streaming for a while, was just not there, may not ever be there.
That's crazy.
I think a lot of us took that for granted, too. Even with me in the magazines, I mean, I lost a whole lot of magazines, especially when I moved, and I wish I had a lot on that. Now, I was able to keep the rare one. I was able to keep the Michael Jackson tribute issue that XXL did. In mint condition. Some of the ones, like, I kept that one and the one with 50, Eminem, and Dre on the cover. I was able to get those.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we probably got a couple of those. Yeah, we got so many magazines, so many CDs, so many tapes. But I feel like nobody's seen this coming as fast as it did. Like, you know, we were burning CDs at one point, and then that kind of just stopped. And now everything is in the cloud, you know.
But it's wild, though, y'all, because a lot of those CDs are, like, even on a bootleg, you know, like Cam'ron's joint he did back in the day. I think it was called Public Enemy. You know, I think that was back in, what, 2008 that was released, and that's hard to find now. You know, that 50 Cent is the future. You know,
a lot of
mixtapes.
Now when you see the mixtape site shutting down, so it's, you know, now we only got YouTube, and once they start pulling them off YouTube, then maybe they ain't gonna have mixtapes. So.
You know, even with De La Soul working out here. Yeah, I mean, even with De La Soul with the reissue. There's still some issues that they had to do with the sample clearances that never got cleared from 30 years ago. You know, 30, 35 years ago, they never got cleared. So the CDs, the originals, if you can find them, that's still where you may want to go.
Yeah, and they got different versions. Yeah, and they got different versions of the songs on them.
Yeah. Because those original joints, you know, the original 3 feet high rising, and you know, De La Soul is dead. You know, I have the reissue of it, but it's not the same as the first. and neither is 3 Feet High Rising. It's not the first of that one in terms of the samples. Also as well, when you look at it, a lot of the records, a lot of actual big, like 3-6 Mafia back in the day, a lot of those albums, even with the physicals, they are hard to find now. You know,
Yeah, early stuff. Early stuff.
Yeah. It's just,
it's a gift and a curse. So the streaming shit is a gift and a curse.
You know, y'all, and me and my brother, we talked about this on air with so many of our guests over the years about how people got seduced into the efficiency of streaming and how easy they thought it would be in terms of just listening. But nobody, like you said, many was understanding the history from an aspect of, you know, the logistics of the business in terms of sample clearances, distribution, all of that. And like you said, a lot of those albums, you're not, if you don't have the physical, you're not going to get it online because it never ran through those streaming services. I mean, even when, even more recently, when you look at what happened with the joint with Beyonce's new album, you know, where she used a Khalees sample and Khalees got all petty about it.
Right.
And Beyonce took it off. She just took it off the, she just took it off the site. Now, if you got the physical album, you know, you can get it, the original, you know, it's still up on the, but she took it off screen. You know, I mean, when Ice Cube with No Vaseline, you know, when he had that line, because you let a Jew break up my crew, you know, they took the Jew out of it with My Crazy Life.
I think that was I think they did that. I think that's their way with streaming. It's just like they did with Modern Society, y'all. Like, what they did was they wanted to play on to our comfortability. Like, whatever is convenient to you, they want to play on to it, not knowing it's going to harm in the long run. They figure, hey, we can just go ahead and just give these, give somebody a whole, give a nigga a whole library away. It's convenient for you, cause you ain't gotta, you ain't gotta drive to the store and buy the CD now. But at the same time, it's hurting in the long run, cause not only the artist not getting paid, but also they could delete your whole catalog just like that if you get out of line.
Yep.
It's crazy.
Crazy.
Shout out to Young Conda Don, because we always shout him out when we talk about his streaming. We had him on about 3-4 years ago, and the man broke down the whole science between how the streamings work in terms of how much money these artists actually get paid, which is not much, you know. But you know, there's still nothing more to, and we all grew up in that era of having physicals in our hands. We grew up reading the magazine. So we had a more intimate understanding in terms of reading the liner notes, reading the lyrics, reading who produced, reading who mixed it, reading the articles and the magazines, all of that. So we really, really had an engaging and educational experience of how we began to really understand what was going on at the time with it. You know, and y'all niggas won't believe this when I say this shit. I was actually, once again, online, just fucking around. And I was looking at the XXL, Source Magazine from a few years ago, because Source Magazine actually stopped printing physicals in about 4 years ago. So they had like a two-cover set with DaBaby and somebody else on a double cover. But anyway, those that magazines are worth a lot of money now already.
eBay and stuff, or?
Yeah, on eBay, they're worth a lot of money now.
I never use, I don't know how you use eBay and all that.
I've used eBay plenty of times. You just got to know who you're getting it from, but eBay is good. eBay's become the Wild West, though, because it's like, you know, back in the day, stuff was kind of moderate, but now the way that that's, I mean, they just, some of those people, in terms of how they price their shit, it's gone crazy up there. Like, the Raekwon Glaciers of Ice single, Terminology. I saw that. I saw it. Hold on. But the Glaciers of Ice single, I got it on eBay for like $10 back in 2018. I went on about a couple months ago, that single was worth like $45.
Well, I
know. I'm not even going to tell you. Oh, go ahead.
Oh, no, I was going to say, I know we need, the only thing that we need now is the Purple Tape. I know that shit is probably so much money. And whoever's selling them, so it's like 400 plus.
Oh, nigga, it's more than that. I see the Purple Tape for some of that. I've seen some of those Purple Tapes go for like, shout out to Get On Down. They are a memorabilia company that specializes in special packages for a lot of hip-hop albums. Shout out to them. They did a Purple Tape reissue because they got a license to press it. This was years ago, and the Purple Tape they were pressing up, I think they were doing a deal for like $30, which is fine. And then they had like the whole like gift set. It had like the box, the CD, the cassette. It was like a whole shebang-a-bang of things. I've seen that on eBay, that gift set go for like $800. The Purple Tape by itself is from an original press in 1995. I've seen go for $400 or $500. Even the gray cassette, because I thought all of them were pressed in the purple. But there were some grays too, and they considered the gray to be more rare. And I've seen the gray go for like $300-$400. But yeah, it's crazy.
Yeah, we got the case, and we ain't got no tape. We got the case and the liner notes.
Yeah.
No tape, no cassette tape.
Even, but like I said, that's, what do you, from your experience and your staff, many as a curator, King and me are curious, what do you think brings about a certain level of sought-after hunting and a certain level of just the wow factor with certain albums in terms of why they are so much collector's items? Like, for instance, with Jay-Z's Reasonable Doubt with a cassette, that is worth a lot of money. The Blueprint cassette, if you could,
the classic album, Effect, or like, oh, this wasn't appreciated at a certain point, or this is such and such first album. It's really, I think it's the conversations behind it, like how much people talk about it. And, you know, I think it's just with like classic and rare shit.
Yeah, I guess it's an artifact in a sense, but even looking at Nas's Illmatic, you know, like that cassette is worth like a couple $100 on eBay.
Yeah.
But a cassette alone,
a couple of those.
Yeah, Biggie's Ready to Die, you know, the original cassette. And it's crazy because when the CD, because when the remaster came out in 2004, and King told me about it, which is why I had to jump on it and get the original, because I have the original as well as the remaster. If you listen close on some of the remaster, some of those samples are a bit different, you know, than what it was on the original.
Yeah, they want to pay them sample clearances. So sometimes they got to redo them, just like even with the Daylight joint.
Yeah. So it's crazy,
man.
Can't
be expensive, dude.
So in terms of it, how did you manage to get the whole staff together? Like, what was, because I also, you know, we see you online when y'all do y'all roundtable discussions about discussing albums of certain history. How did you find a collective of like-minded individuals and help you with that vision?
I barely have a staff, honestly. I barely have a staff. Like, that's really, like, a thing with me at this spot at a time. So when I started, it was probably about 6 or 7 people, and only one of them all around there when I first started. But so the guys who we see on live doing the debates in the park, one of them is my partner as far as the music business that we do. he posts those lists, DJ Beautiful Perfection. He posts those lists all the time that get people riled up. He's my main partner in terms of the mini hip hop museum. He's sending me lists and a lot of them old school videos that I probably never even seen because he's like 10 or 15 years older than me. And then the other guys, so at one point we were doing mini hip hop debates weekly right before the pandemic. So a lot of the guys who see on live, when we do the live, that's where they came from. And they just like debating and talking shit.
Ain't nothing wrong with it.
Speaking of debate, I would ask him this too, man. Because I remember you did a post a while back. I think you was talking about, you know, the old heads, you know, not accepting the culture evolving and being accepting more so with the new form of hip-hop and new MCs that, you know, changing the guard. Do you think that mindset is still exists amongst the older heads?
Say it again. My phone was breaking up.
Yeah, because I think you did a post a while back. It was about people in hip hop. You know, I think the older heads complaining about the culture.
Oh yeah.
I'm like, man, this man came out of character for a minute and just did it.
Guys, it's just like you see the main ones are the ones who like the mumble rap. They complain about the mumble rap. The mumble rap this like. Mumble rap came and went. Like, that's not even a thing no more. Like, y'all are just using certain words that y'all using keywords that y'all just to downplay the younger generation. Like, the mumble rap shit, it doesn't, like, that shit came and went. Like, it's not even, like, a thing anymore. And you don't have to listen to it. Like, that's the thing about today. Like, nobody needs to complain about what the young kids are doing because we got so many ways to listen to music. Like, you don't even have to know that they exist. They might pop up on your timeline, but the more you talk about them, the more they're going to be around because that's how the algorithm works. You know, like, just focus on your streaming app and what you're going to play, and that's it. People can make their own playlist and all that now. We're not just restricted to radio and TV.
Now, how do you feel about where we've seen a bit of the 90s sensibilities come back, or groups like Griselda, you know, Rome Streets, all of them, who really brought that essence back of real lyricism and gritty beats?
You know, that was important. That's key. Of course, they're not gonna like go super mainstream, but that was important for the people who was like, oh, hip-hop is dead and all of this. Like, hip-hop never died. Like, you know, you might have to look a little harder for it now, but this nigga's out here spitting. Yeah, the Zelda was like, that's the closest we've got to the 90s in the past 10 years. But I feel like even now, like, they kind of, like, slowed down and just, you know, because you kind of seen Conway was stepping away from them a little bit, and they had their little inner issues and shit, but I feel like they not really providing what they was providing early on. Like, they definitely slowed down the output and switched things up a little bit. In terms of the West Side Gun, Benny and Conway.
I think it's also a factor that they facing the pressure of, much like a lot of artists today, they have to release more music than ever before. They can't really take no breaks. So they fear oversaturation.
Yeah. I mean, the shit, they was oversaturating the market. I feel like maybe they felt like they did a lot of that already. But they got hella content.
Right.
Between the three of us. Yeah.
So what would you have to say about artists in terms of what they have to understand about how to come in the game and have longevity? Because we've seen a lot of artists over the past even 3 years, 4 years come in, and they didn't really become what everybody thought they would.
Yeah,
and it kind of, you know, faded out for them.
A lot of they don't be knowing the business. They don't know the business, so it's important to know the business, have the right things. You gotta have the right people around you, know what you're doing. Like, consistency is key, but you gotta make the right moves. So. I feel like a lot of it is just bad business. It's easier now more than ever to, you know, be consistent and put out content.
What would you say in terms of how magazines, would you say magazines are still important in terms of being able to have a history? Because it's a lot of times, a lot of these publications have gone digital now. How would you say, what would you say is the value in terms of keeping, like, real publications, physical publications out to this day?
I feel like it's completely irrelevant, like print media. So people got short attention spans. Most people don't read, like they don't even want to read if your caption is too long or something like that. Like, nobody's going to go buy a magazine. Nobody wants to keep a magazine. And it just seemed like a lot of the artists, and there's no interesting stories or nothing to read about really today. Like, it's all about the headline. But a lot of the artists that's coming out, they're not really providing nothing overly interesting. If it was maybe five, 10 years ago, my answer might have been different, but yeah, the need for print media has diminished. You on Zone 4 yet?
How you all have branched this out on so many different levels. What's the continued evolution for your endeavors in terms of what you all are still looking to do in business?
I want to. In terms of the Mini Hip Hop Museum, I wanna get back to traveling more, popping up at festivals, and doing that kind of stuff. But it's hard when you don't have like reliable, responsible people, or whatever. Like, I feel like I need a team of younger people, but it's just like most people are like lazy when the vision is not theirs or they're not really committed. It's hard to find people that's reliable or have the time. Like, everybody has a life, you know, and if they don't come up with the idea, then they don't really want to go with what you're trying to do. But I want to get out and do my thing, but I got a lot to cover at home in terms of where we are in Boston. Like, I don't feel like I've scratched the surface there yet, even though I've been open for 4.5+ years. In terms of the Mini Hip Hop Museum. And I got a baby on the way. I got a son that's 17. It's a lot. So the overall goal was to expand, but life's gotta be right.
One thing about it, we definitely support what you're doing in terms of how you have been able to get this going. I mean, obviously, you know, your page is dope, man, and we would implore everybody to go follow it in terms of really just seeing that history. Especially, you know, there was a dope post you put a while back about the situation with Ice Cube and Common. Of course, our generation, we know that history in terms of how it all came. What do you think of the time when all that stuff was going on and into the culture in terms of how it was being perceived and what Common had did in terms of how he felt it needed to be addressed?
Well, and also, just before I speak on it, because I was born in 87, so like at that time when it was going on, I was a fucking kid. So all I know is like what I've heard and what I read is true. And funny that you brought that up, because we got about 4 or 5 posts lined up, looking, you know, we posted about it twice, but it's still like more that we have lined up to post about it. I try to space it out. I was actually going to post another part of the debate, but you know, Carmen said that it wasn't meant to be a book, and they took it that way. But shit, I think the overall consensus for most people is that he won, like he killed the nigga. With just a song or two. How you doing? I was 94, 95 when that started.
I wasn't even 10 yet.
I was about
6 or 7 years old. Yeah, we remember it. It was crazy because you know hip hop was in a weird place. I won't even say a weird place back then because it was just kind of the transitioning of it. We saw in the '90s the explosion, the proliferation of street rap, you know, more commonly known as gangster rap. It was definitely a harder edge. And I think when Common did it, he was doing it, he did that song from a perspective about just where he felt everything was going. Like everybody, it kind of was prophetic at the time when we look back, because everybody, you know, because now we, the criticisms for a lot of the new artists out here is that everybody thinks that they can do it. You know, and with social media, internet, all that, you know, everybody thinks that they can just come in and be an artist. And back in the day, you had a lot of artists coming in who were really trying to stake their claim. But the 90s was a very unique time because you saw so many people just really blow up from an underground level. You saw, you know, No Limit. You saw Cash Money. You saw Jay-Z. You saw Nas. You know, you saw... You know, Two Live Crew still doing that thing. It was just a mix of so many different people. And I think more important than anything, y'all, everybody was getting a chance to be heard. It wasn't like you were just hearing one thing all the time. You were hearing a little bit of everything as it went along.
There was a lot of diversity. There was a lot of diversity at the time, and they couldn't really control a lot of it. They couldn't control a lot of the content because, keep in mind, in the 90s, everything was still fresh. We didn't understand really the corporate side of things as of yet.
Right.
But we
right.
was making so much, but the culture, people within the culture was making so much money.
Yeah, it was definitely a different time back then. You know, but that was definitely a unique time going on during that period.
When Common did that, you know, like people always say, people always like to go back and say that the Tupac and Biggie thing started the East and West, but that wasn't even the case. Like, that shit started when I'm saying that the DJ Tipping.
Well, you know, it's funny because we were around for that history, and when we look at what happened during that time, when the Common said what he said on that record, obviously the West took issue with it. And we love our West Coast brothers out there because they brought a lot to the game that we didn't know about at the time in terms of what was going on out there. And obviously when Q did, you know, said what he said, I mean, of course, Common had his other B-side record, The Bitch in You, you know, and that was like, whoa. When we first heard that, we were like, whoa. We ain't said that for Common. And, of course, you know, with West Side Connection, when they did Bow Down, that was a hard album. I mean, they were basically saying, like, you know, the West Coast, we got something to say, too. You know, Cube had already been in the game for a little bit. Mac 10 was kind of a relative newcomer. You know, Dove C had been in the game with Low Profile. You know, of course, WC and the Mad Circle prior to. So, but even then, it was never a situation for all the lyrical barbs that got traded back and forth. Nobody ever felt like it would ever turn violent. And I think that was the key.
Yeah, it was a different time too. A lot of them beats back then were like settled by Minister Farrakhan.
Yeah, a lot of those beats.
Yes.
I think also too with those beats too, it wasn't gonna really get violent because there still was a respect level when it came to the skill set.
They don't back then in common with the issue at that Sprite commercial shoot.
It was still, just like T-Max was saying, it was not really, it could have got there, but at the end of the day, it's still that kind of respect level because they both were nice on the mic between Cube and Common. So it wasn't going to really go violence. But today, there ain't no respect.
None. 0%.
Nah, they like F you, your dead homies, your dead mama, your dead granddaddy, everything.
Where do y'all think it started in terms of the lack of respect and where it really jumped to that different level? I want to get both of y'all's opinion on it.
I mean, honestly, like, it's been disrespectful, but they need to keep it on wax back in the day for the most part. But it's been like lyrically disrespectful. I want to say the major disrespect probably. I mean, like, there's a lot of disrespectful shit being said in the 90s. But if we fast forward to 2000s, I think it really got wild. Probably around the time of Super Ugly, Jay Z and 50 Cent really started some, you know, saying some wild shit in their diss record. And bringing the kids and doing shit like that.
Yeah, with me, I would probably say this. I would probably say when Gucci Man dropped the truth on Jeezy. When he was talking about, oh, did you flip? Oh, did your partner? Baby can't say shit.
Mm-hmm.
So that opened up the door now because the way Gucci said it, it had the shock value effect. And everybody was like, oh, ah. And that, all these guys started really following that pattern.
Yeah, because a lot of them, Gucci is like the OG. But then, you got Gucci, and then from there, that Chicago shit, she's keeping them.
Yeah, that opened up the door to where we at now. But to me, that's where it started. It started around when the truth came out, which was no lie. I thought it was cold diss record itself. Even when he performed it at the Versus, I was like, God dang, Jesus, you got to throw a chair at that nigga or something. You there, T-Max?
Yeah, I'm here.
Hold on, one second.
I think, too.
Yeah.
I'm here. But I think also, too, with a lot of OGs back in the day, I think they also knew from a level of the street gang what could happen. And I think a lot of people really understood the implications. Biggie and Tupac get the most attention from it because those were the first big superstars that crossed a lot of bounds in terms of they had a very wide audience from the hip-hop as well as the mainstream. You know, people who were not even casual rap listeners knew about them. They were not necessarily heavy in the culture, but they were casual listeners and they had a name. So when you have two artists of that stature, you're dealing with it from a perspective of celebrity, and then, of course, the drama that came behind it. Of course, the Quad shooting, you know, November 28th, 1994, when that happened with Pop. You know, and he just, you know, for people to really understand Pac's life, and I will say this on air, you really have to understand why he took it the way he did. Now, did he handle it the best way at the time without proof of anything? Probably not. But you got to remember, this dude was a Panther. His whole family were Panthers. They've been hunted down by the government their whole life. And you get shot, that's traumatizing. You know, I mean, it was just, and, you know, this is 1994, so, you know, Pac pretty much well into his career during the time. We hear about Pac getting shot, you know, we're bugged out because we're like, what? like we couldn't even believe it when it happened. You know, in that situation, you know, you know, but when it happened the way it did, yeah, it was crazy.
Yeah, because there was no, and keep in mind too, this was around the time where when people were beefing, it had to be settled on site. It was no internet, it was no social media. Your best bet to settle things had to be face to face. You didn't know where it was gonna go. There was no pre-initiation to the meetup. That's why I was telling people, man, y'all niggas got it good today. Y'all can just get on Instagram, talk to a big homie, add him, and he can sell it for y'all, do a Zoom call.
Man, look, back in the day, though, if you really had problems and it really got, I mean, we look at all the issues, of course. Common and Cube had their issues. Luke and Snoop, back in the day, they had their issues, you know, with Luke Records and Death Row. We still really don't know how that even started, but we're glad they squashed it. You know, but
DJ name again?
MC Shan.
No, from Boogie Down
Production. PM Dawn? You talking about PM Dawn?
No, hold on. Let me go over this shit. I can't. I'm going to bank that. Let me go over.
And Scott, you know, rest in peace, you know, the DJ, you know, yeah, but that was definitely, you know, and his death was definitely felt in the industry. Hip-hop had not gotten to that point. Like, if you were really in the culture, it affected you because you knew what Scott did in terms of how he laid it down for BDP, you know, but it wasn't that world event. From a perspective of everybody, like, if you were really in hip-hop, you knew it, and you felt it, you were hurt by it. But hip-hop by then still had not gotten to that place where it was a multi-billion dollar business that is now the highest charting, you know, culture in the world in terms of it spread all over, you know, through commercials to, you know, songs, even just, you know, pop songs, it's got hip-hop inspired beat to it. You know, but in the 80s, it hadn't quite got there yet. I mean, even when you look at the situation back in the day with BDP and MC Shan, you know, that you never felt like that was going to go anywhere crazy. Of course, you know, KRS, you know, put hands on Prince B back in the day and threw him off stage. And that was wild.
I wish we had video footage of that.
Yeah, somebody, I was just for an interview, and I forgot who it was, but he said he was dead with KRS when that happened.
For those who don't know how that happened, that was a situation where they asked Prince B in an interview about KRS, and they said, do you consider him a teacher? Well, no, they asked him about KRS. And Prince B says something to the effect of, he says he's a teacher, but a teacher of what? You know, and obviously for obvious reasons, that caused a lot of issues. And that's when KRS ran up on him. This was like, what, 92 that happened. And we were, you know, we were, because KRS was like, we never knew, like, them to be like, you doing anything like that? Then we hear about it. I remember I heard about it on MTV News. They said rapper KRS-One confronts Big Prince B at a concert and throws him off stage. A PM Dawn throws him off. I'm like, what?
Toss the homie off the stage. If this would have happened in today's era, yo, it would have been viral 6 times.
Man, that was...
This fight about to take off in a little bit, like
Okay. Definitely. Minnie, our best. We love you and your staff for what y'all doing. Keep doing what y'all doing. You know, you're welcome back anytime. Safe travels. You know, we're going to be connected on the book and IG as well. So, look, y'all keep doing what you're doing, man. And thank you for everything, man. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you. Let me know what you're doing in the future.
Appreciate
all right, bro.
You
need to come back for this. I need to come back for part 3.
Definitely.
I won.
Once again.
I
won. Peace. Brother King, take us out of here.
All right, on that note, we up out of here. Episode 553 is on the wrap up. Catch us this Thursday night. Same off the cuff time, same off the cuff channel. And we out.
Peace, y'all. Much love. Out.